some ways kind of broad, but I think it relates probably to everybody's experience, and that is the difficulties and challenges that we all face in trying to deal meaningfully with work in our society and the time that that takes in relationship to other important facets such as personal, spiritual life, family, if you're involved in a family, or church life. To just kind of kick it off, we have four panel members here, that a couple of whom will speak more on personal experience, Bob Niedringhaus on the staff, and Norma Strumman on the teaching staff, and Mark Schwing on teaching staff, and Dorothy Bashway. And thank you for being here. I thought we'll just start her off, and then when they have made some statements, to just describe perhaps some of the different facets, we then could open it up for discussion. And I would see the primary areas us getting at would be certainly any kinds of discussion which helps to clarify and see more clearly what some of the problems are. I suppose this is naming our experience. And then also, I suppose, to explore are there Carol Tomer, Pastor Holden, who just left, did a master's thesis in this whole area, and was saying to me earlier today that oftentimes we have unique and idiosyncratic ways of trying to deal with these pressures. But maybe there are some ways in which collectively we can think of how to constructively deal with them as a result of sharing together rather than just each individual trying to deal with it. Mark, you want to go first?
Sure. For my remarks, I should say, I've been asked to announce that tomorrow night's forum will combine the three topics that we've had so far this week, and it'll be entitled, Should We Ordain People Who Have Worked at Burger King? this will then kind of bring the week together, and I know there's a lot of heated feeling about that issue, and so we can really kind of... But I don't want to deal with that broad and very controversial question myself.
How about with the flatness of the earth, too?
The question for this evening's thought and conversation is the question, should we work to live or should we live to work? And the first remark I want to make is simply to remind us of what we all know already, namely that in the past, currently, and in the future, for the vast majority of human beings, that's not really an alternative. I mean, in other words, they don't choose one of those two. They are forced through necessity to take one alternative, namely, most human beings have, currently do, and always will, work in order to live. Okay? So let's bear in mind right away that though for many of us in this room, this is a kind of question and a sort of dilemma that we're going to work through. That just hasn't been the case for most human beings and isn't currently the case for most human beings because most of them simply must work in order to live. Having said that, I want to just make a couple historical and theological points here. These are fairly broad and others will be more confessional in their remarks. Those of us who are Lutheran by background, I would say Protestant by background, not just Lutheran, are familiar with how hallowed a term in our tradition the word vocation is. It comes from the fact that when Martin Luther translated the Bible, he used the same word, beruf, which we translate vocation, to refer both to the Christian's calling to the Christian life in Corinthians, or the calling to salvation, and also for the word work, or the kind of work that the garbologist or the person on dish team or I myself on teaching staff would do. Same word for both terms. And therefore, there grew up quite explicitly in Luther's theology a whole notion of vocation as something that we're called to by God. And against the background of the medieval world in which it was thought that the people who were really close to God by virtue of their vocation were the religious, and the rest of the folks just weren't. This was a highly democratic and very liberal and even a radical conception that whatever work you did, milking the cows, rearing the young, teaching school, being the prince, whatever work you did, it was part of a system of callings by which God had ordered the human world and in which the Christian could serve the neighbor in love. Calvin made this whole notion a bit more intense, and we needn't review all of the complexions there. But suffice it to say that the view again there was pretty much the view that whatever one did, one was to serve the neighbor in one's calling, whatever that calling was, because it was finally God who called individuals into these tasks, and also finally God who basically, by ordering all of these callings into a kind of system, made it possible for all kinds of neighbors to be served in all kinds of ways through life. Okay? So that's basically the Protestant notion of vocation. What I want to suggest has happened is that we've taken this one step further, and we're sort of, many of us in this room, and I'll just speak, I guess, for myself rather than speaking for you, because I have to confess here, have driven this whole notion one step further and are kind of victims of almost a kind of modern heresy here, which is that we now take work to be the place where we find our identity, where we find meaning, where we find self-fulfillment, and we all believe, or many of us do, or at least I do, that somehow if we are not being fulfilled in our work or not finding deep meaning in it, finding our whole identities defined there, then there's something wrong. We have to change jobs or whatnot. A corollary of this is oftentimes we invest so much of ourselves in our work, that it becomes a kind of idol, and there is no room in our lives for friendship, for family, for other kinds of affections that we need to nurture and care for, and we become kind of work obsessed, all in the name of what we vaguely imagine to be some notion of the vocation or the calling. So I want to say when we wrap ourselves up in our work as the place where we find our identity, and in the process neglect lots of other important aspects to our lives, we're really on theologically very thin ice, as well as psychologically and socially and all the other ways that we're on very thin ice. And that's sort of the way I want to open the session.
Thanks.
My statements will be quite that profound. I'm here just to kind of, I'm here, I suppose, as a workaholic. But I don't think my life experience is too much different than many people in this room. In that I was raised in a family of five. My father was an immigrant. I had he was a railroad laborer. We didn't have much money. I spent 15 years after high school going through educational rituals and didn't really go to work until 15 years out of high school as a physician. I wound up specializing in internal medicine and in oncology, and in practice oncology and internal medicine, and have a fairly demanding medical practice, in that I have about two-thirds of my practice is cancer patients and one-third general internal medicine. And I found myself work-wise in a situation where I liked what I was doing. I had spent a lot of time preparing for what I was going to do. I didn't want to teach anybody else how to be a doctor. I didn't want to do anything else but take care of sick people. That's what I had programmed myself for. And I found myself in a situation where there was no end to it. I figure that I probably just on the downside, I probably have 75 to 100 patients a year under my care who die. And just taking care of one or two dying patients a week and going through the process of initiating treatment, treatment that fails, diseases that are incurable, and going through that process, it's impossible to spend enough time with those people to ever feel that you're doing an adequate job. So I'd gotten into feeling that not only did I achieve my identity from working, but I really felt that in trying to sort out whether I work to live or live to work, I really felt that for a long time that living, that my work was my life. And actually, it wasn't until my wife decided to become a wage earner that I realized that if our family was going to hold together, that I had to back off from work and do some things in the home that I hadn't done before. But we had, I think it's a constant struggle. I have a work situation, as many of you do, where certainly as pastors do, where it's a 24-hour a day endless set of problems. For every one you solve, there's another one that crops up, sometimes during the day and sometimes at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so we're still in the process of resolving that. I think one of the ways that it's helped me to realize that there's more delight in working was to have my wife get into a job where she also was in a satisfying wage earning situation in what I felt too was at least as worthwhile as what I was doing, and having just so many hours in the day, began re-injecting myself into our family life, doing more nurturing, and spending more time in family and in fun.
I guess my remarks are asking the question, how do we define meaningful work and how do we reward meaningful work? And I'll start by telling a story. Peter and I lead marriage workshops and also engaged workshops through our local Lutheran social service. And this is a very interesting fact about our work life, is that I led the last marriage workshop by myself because Peter was too busy to come to it. So I thought that was a very interesting statement on what happens to your life, how your work runs away with you. But one of the pieces I did in the workshop was to get at this whole issue of roles and expectations and how couples divide up nitty-gritty. Who does the dishes, who does the garbage, all that stuff. And so we went around the circle to open that session, and I just said, you know, we'd like to just talk about what you think. What is your work? That was just the simple question. What is your work? And went around the circle, and of course, everybody in that group has a job. They are employed at a job. And then I took it from there into some interesting observations from my experience as a parent facilitator. Minnesota has a wonderful statewide program called Early Childhood Family Education. And there are two components to it, and I taught for a while the parent ed program. And my by far most stimulating classes were the evening classes when young couples were trying to, you know, figure out how to do family when they had a little baby or sometimes two that had come into the family, or there would be single parents. And a couple observations that I think we were basically had the same conversation every single night that whole year, and that was about work. And what tended to happen is that if both male and female, both mother and dad, worked full-time, i.e. they both were full-time wage earners, then the man could understand that the woman indeed was working. If the female worked part-time and the male worked full-time, i.e. work meaning gainfully employed, bringing home money, paycheck, then the man in the family could, well, she was sort of working, but not really because it's not a full-time job. And then, of course, the worst situation was if the woman was at home all day and the male in the family was full-time employed, well, really, what does she do? And that was an ongoing conflict that kept surfacing in every single session we had. And then there were several single parents who couldn't even get into those issues because their issues were survival. So I started seeing some real interesting questions about the whole issue of work and how we define work. And also, I think this is autobiographical, but I'm sort of in a middle generation. My mother's generation felt very good, by and large, felt very good about being home with children, working at home. The women that I worked with in these parent groups and most women that I know anymore feel like they have to go to work, which means be employed, to feel good about themselves. Because over and over again in parenting groups, women will just don't feel like they're worth anything if they are working at home, which means not employed. And my own awareness was very much heightened about that during, I'm a teacher, and in our early marriage, I taught for 5 years, and when we had children, I was able to stay home. I did not have to be employed to put bread on the table. And I would always get asked the question, do you work? And I'd go, damn right I work. I just don't get paid for it. And then my awareness was also, I very rarely ever in society hear anybody ask a man if he works. We assume that men work, but we ask women if they work. So I have a very heightened sensitivity to the issue of, do you work out of the home? Are you employed? And so I guess one of my broad questions and how it impacts all of us is, how do we define work? And I like your idea of vocation, that women ought to, men, anybody that is staying at home nurturing children ought to feel like they're doing incredibly meaningful work. But in our society, it is very materialistic. We have to feel rewarded by money, and then a lot of money, to feel like we're worth something. And so I guess that's just my 2 cents worth.
Mm-hmm. I would just carry a little further. I think you're raising a really important point, which is just the poignancy of the various kinds of demands and pulls that one feels in this world, trying to have a family, work, figuring out how to put that together sequentially. More and more people, for good or for ill, are trying to combine family and work styles. Half of the women with children under the age of 3 in the United States are employed outside the home. And there are lots more statistics like that could be added. And the pressures of that situation is something that people have probably observed either in themselves or their friends. I'm wondering about the impact of this situation on the churches, particularly in congregational life, and the impact on the church and what churches can do to help us find our way through this. Most congregations that I know feel the impact in the difficulty of recruiting people, even to bring cookies to coffee out, or, find Sunday school teachers and so on. And sometimes for women, I think that the church adds to the problem. The church's consciousness hasn't been transformed, and you feel even more guilty because you don't feel you can volunteer to teach Sunday school this year, and it adds another layer of guilt to the rest of it. The church events still assume that you'll bring a very nice casserole, and it adds on. That's a small matter, but symbolic. I'm wondering about how churches can help families and individuals to think about this question. One might be by speaking theologically about vocation and what it means, and being really more open and supportive to the non-consumerist ways of dealing with things, such as Norma mentioned. For institutions under church control, such as colleges, schools, villages, whatever, to really be constructive in working on issues of sharing, part-time employment, and so on, institutional adjustments which might help families to survive. But also I think there's a spiritual issue involved, simply of helping. I think there's a real question about our ability as individuals and as couples and as families
to sort out what really matters, you know, what is essential in all the different demands of work, volunteering, family time, church life. There's a necessity, I think, to know in a spiritual sense where the center is, you know, to find one's way through these various guilt-inducing, conflicting demands of our time. And I hope that the church, preaching, village life, and so on could help us to do that.
Well, these statements, I think, have probably stimulated thinking along a number of lines, and so I'd like now to open it up and certainly kind of address either questions or opinions to panel members, or just make the statement. I'll moderate and try to, I think we've been pretty good this week about getting a lot of people into things and being able to express themselves. So would anybody like to start? Right. Okay.
Well, this is not really a question, more of a statement or an observation. Perhaps it's unique to the congregations I've been involved in, but I think one thing the church could really do, again, at least the congregations I've been involved in, is realize that, at least within my generation, and I'm getting close enough to the point that there's another grown-up generation that's behind me. Most families, for economic or social or whatever reasons, are both parents or both partners working outside the home, and yet it seems like 95% of the Bible studies, perhaps directed at women's groups, the ELCA women's group and stuff, is 12:15 during the week, 2 o'clock in the afternoon during the week, which is cutting out an entire generation or two from participation. And I think right there it shows perhaps a lack of either knowledge of what they're doing or sensitivity to some situations.
So what's a better time?
I agree there are some good times in the day, but to take our particular situation at our church, within some of the Bible study groups, out of 10, 9 are during the day during the week. I would think a sprinkling of maybe 3 during the day, maybe a Saturday morning, maybe an evening one, allow not only for, actually for both women and men, not only for the fact that a lot of people work outside the home, particularly in some communities more than others, also that people work odd hours nowadays. That sometimes, for an extreme, maybe 2 in the morning is a convenient time, depending on the community you're in, if they're working that shift, to allow for it. Not everyone works 9 to 5, and not everyone's, you know, mommy stays at home like in the days when I was growing up. And I think the church has been slow to realize this.
One of the points, of course, that is really being raised indirectly here is, does work, as we now experience it with its pressures, actually begin to squeeze out a spiritual life? And the nurture of those spiritual disciplines, I think Rob mentioned that in his Bible study, where you have, in effect, a high percentage of any congregation simply not involved in any meaningful way in any kind of spiritual discipline that might allow them to grow in their faith. There's a hand over here, and then
I was just going to respond to that. One of the larger churches in the community that I live has Bible studies 24 hours a day to accommodate shift work people, including swing and graveyard. And it's long. They've done this for 15 years, and they're one of the largest churches in the community. It's in Portland, Oregon.
That's interesting. And then up here.
I think the other thing is sex segregated, age segregated activities. When you have limited time together as a family, you have a lot of activities being focused on one member of the family, I think also shuts out and makes you choose between your family or your spiritual life.
Mm-hmm. Up here, and then
another question about the spirituality angle and work. It seems to me that we've long, for a long time, searched for meaning, and meaning to our lives. And I see a lot of people who say that their work is very meaningless, and are looking for something outside of their work, job, place of employment to find some kind of meaning in their lives, because they're not finding that very satisfactory. And they look to the church, and the church doesn't have anything either. The spiritual disciplines that you spoke of take time. And somebody this morning talked about fast food liturgies. We're a very fast-paced society, and the whole society is geared towards fast food. Spiritual disciplines take a long time. I see the evangelical churches growing because they offer a variety, and they find that somehow or another they've been able to get people into a variety of spiritual disciplines. Lutheranism doesn't seem to be able to function that.
This was more related to the comment back there, but I've recently become a young single in a congregation, and I noticed one thing that annoyed me was the segregation of ages. Every social event is young singles out for, you know, bar hopping or whatever. And, you know, that's not what we're doing. That, you know, the whole idea of church family is gone. And, you know, I personally can go see 25-year-olds anytime I want to. And I really would appreciate more sort of the kind of church social interaction that we have here at the village.
Yeah, I was going to say something. I was laughing because actually my experience in my congregation is completely different, being in a big city and on a big campus, and so it's like a big party. I mean, there are a lot of single people, and so, I mean, that is nice. But I was thinking, I was going to just add some comments to what you were saying, and it seems like, especially in America nowadays, I mean, being a foreigner, I can have a different perspective. And I think that a lot of problems in terms of work and derived mostly by the fact that the family structure is completely disintegrating in this country. Therefore, I mean, as a single person or as a married person, you know, when you have to choose whether to have kids or not and things like that, when, you know, you have to deal with these big issues, you end up really, I mean, just devoting yourself to your work and you kind of workaholic. And people moving around too much and have, I mean, roots really in one place and things like that. I think that, I mean, makes things very complicated. And I don't know whether church per se can really do something about it. Sure, they, you know. For me personally, that has been the place where I have come more in touch with myself and be able to see things in a different perspective. I actually had some other thoughts about what you were saying about vocational. And I lived in Germany quite a few years, and when I was young, I was 20, and I ran around for years saying, you know, I don't know who I am, I'm looking for myself, blah, 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 especially in the 70s. And when I got tired of that, you know, I had already a PhD from Italy, and then I came to the United States, and everybody was asking who I was. Like, and since I, you know, I was just running around saying, I don't know who I am, you know, not saying I'm a doctor or whatever. Anyway, I gave up, and, you know, I decided to go back to school and get a PhD so I could have a better definition of myself, a better identity. Mm-hmm. So I guess within a couple of years I can say, I don't know who I am, PhD. I don't know. And that is something that really has bothered me here and in Germany, that you have to be, I mean, have to have a title next to your name. Mm-hmm. And being a student of literature, I'm gonna be probably, you know, a college professor or whatever, I have a big problem with that. I mean, I on the one hand, people say, oh, it's a wonderful profession. I mean, it's like, oh, this is a big mission, you know, you can mold students and, you know, you can do great things with that. And some of the people, especially in America, they don't care about that. I mean, they don't know what a teacher is. Or, I mean, especially with, I'm very frustrated right now with my profession. We were discussing before that. It's like, what's there for me? I mean, how can I combine my interests, being a Christian, my spirituality, and, you know, have a meaning in my profession? I don't know.
Here and then here.
I used to think that work equals worth. You know, that's kind of the old cliche in America. What I'm starting to wonder is if busyness equals worth, much more than work. If you listen, just listen to kind of suburbia, or if you go home and read the newsletters that you receive from people at Christmas time. The thing that permeates those letters more than anything else is we have been so busy this past year. And for someone to say, you know, to meet someone and say, well, what are you doing? Well, not a whole lot. there's a real sense of guilt there. And then you combine that with spirituality that takes a long time, and then the church gets caught up in that, because what they do is they say, what do we need to do? Well, we need to compete and provide a lot of programs so that we can split families rather than combine families. It seems to me that there's an insane busyness in America that's just, it's terribly frightening. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to get at that, but it really, really permeates the society.
Do you want to go, or?
Well, I just quickly to add, I think that's ties into the consumer thing too, and I teach family spirituality classes at Augsburg Institute in Minneapolis, and you know, since why do we have to have other people do our spirituality for us? I mean, we're very resourceful, intelligent people, and if we take the time to read and be together, and you can do a whole bunch of stuff at home, we've got resources. But I see that's another dimension of that church getting caught in business, because we have to hire some professionals to teach classes so that we can learn, or how else would we learn?
I've seen over 300 different clergy in therapy, and my psychic consultant just made a remark a couple months ago. He says, you know, every case you brought here has some obsessive compulsive component. And I was thinking, you know, here's the church. Theologically, it's grace, not works, but practically, it sounds like it's works, not grace. And, well, everybody that goes to, pastors are going to go to professional school or seminary or graduate school. By the way, if you go, you have to be obsessive compulsive. And you get rewarded for it. But it's not a mystery what this obsessive compulsiveness is to the psychological world. And that is that underneath all that is not just attempt to gain worth. Either A, we're trying to hide a feeling or a group of feelings. And B, we're still seeking somebody's approval. So there are those deeper issues that are there that are within our own sphere and that we have to deal with. And then you've got a number of us in the helping professions who have a double dose, because we're codependents. We need these people to take care of. And there's just a literature all over about codependence today, because I think we all have it. And I wish they'd stop some of that literature, because pretty soon we won't have anybody to bring cookies to the office anymore. So I think everybody's got to kind of have to look at their own self in terms of what my limits are. I come in and say, well, you know, how many hours should I work? 60 hours, 70 hours, 80 hours? You know, you have to learn your own limits. And if I went back in the parish today, I would be a different parish pastor. I wouldn't put in the hours I did before. I would block out who I was going to be in different times. And I think we have to be in control of that. It's just not the world today. I think we have to take some responsibility for ourselves, what we choose to be and how we choose to do it.
It raises a kind of an interesting question. Is a contemporary American society masking some pain and covering up by its obsessive compulsive behavior of busyness and seeking self-worth through achievement in work? I don't know, you know, if that question could go anywhere, if anybody has some ideas.
I think he raised his hands first.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, if you're responding to that, go right ahead.
On this question of busyness, putting on the hat of a small entrepreneur, 100 years ago, if I had started a company, I could do a deal with somebody in New York. I could write a letter, and that would go by Pony Express. And maybe 2 weeks later, I'd get my answer back. During that time, I could do any number of things. Today, I do it by telephone and Federal Express. I have no reaction time if things go wrong. I have a federal auditor, a state auditor, several state auditors who can show up at my door at any time and want to look at my books. If I'm small enough, during the course of the day, in addition to doing what I supposedly do best, there's the overhead of the bookkeeping, if I can't afford a bookkeeper, or monitoring the bookkeeper, if I do have one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that the level of overhead just to get a small business off the ground is so high that you can kiss your free time. Sundays are not a day for worship, rest, and reflection. They're a day for catching up on the intellectual side of the business because the phone isn't ringing. Social situations slip, vacations slip, time with the family slip, just to keep that little monster alive until such time as you can find employees responsible enough, whom you can afford, to take that load off your back. So whether there's an obsession or a compulsion involved with that or not, whether or not you went through umpteen years of college to do this or not, you're stuck with a minimum level of overhead that is going to, and this is, you know, small business is the American way. You know, so this is a big thing.
A note of realism about the terrain in which we finding ourselves. Did you want to comment?
Yeah. After letting my obsessive compulsive behavior run wild 3 years as a high school teacher, I decided it was time for a time out. And I had the fortune of traveling in Asia for 6 months this last year. And I started out in Nepal. And then I went to India, then I went to Thailand. And I saw a real step in the direction of development. Nepal is one of the poorest countries in the world. And as I walked to the mountains there, what did I see? I didn't see starving people. Instead, I saw people sitting around. It was after the harvest. They had their food in, and they didn't have anything to do. They just sit around. They're happy. They play with each other. They're having festivals. It was great. India, okay, more development, higher per capita income. People were working more, but still sitting around a lot. Now, Thailand, on the other hand, Thailand is not really what I would consider a third world nation any longer. It's got a lot of wealth. People there are working 15 hours a day. And why? Because 5 years ago, it was okay just to have a bicycle. But now, in Bangkok, you don't see bicycles anywhere. Everybody has a motorcycle. Or a tuk-tuk, they ride around. Yeah. And now the motorcycle isn't enough. They want to have a Toyota. But a Toyota truck. Now the Toyota truck very soon will be not good enough. We want to have a Toyota car. And what I saw was the more goods were necessary and required, the more people had work. So I wonder, you know, the materialism that we're swimming in this country. What was it like here 100 years ago, 150 years ago? Did people work as hard?
Coming just out of high school, though, I mean, it's a different perspective. We're not taught anymore we're not educated in order that we can live. I felt last year like I was being educated in order that I can work, and I think that that may be, in some cases, the root of some job dissatisfaction in older people. I mean, myself, I was put in a position this year along with many other teenagers, you know, young people who are just right now beginning to, you know, formulate their interests and understand their interests, they're being asked right now to decide what program they're going to go into in university, exactly what classes they're going to take, these things that shape their lives for the rest of their lives. I mean, if they're going to be a doctor, they're going into, you know, the pre-med sort of stuff right now. And I sort of question, you know, what if so many kids are so scared, because what if you're 2 years into that and find out that it's really for yourself a load of whatever, you know, it just doesn't work for you. Well, too many kids, because of, you know, parental pressure or whatever kind of pressure, would never get out of it, because they've already wasted, for lack of a better word, 2 years of their lives, and it would just be too hard to turn around and change. So they go on with this, and then, you know, you finish that and you get whatever degree you get, and then you think, well, you know, I'll work for a little while and I may be able to change them, but that doesn't really work, because as soon as you know it, you're married and you have kids to take care of. And so basically you're still the same 18-year-old when you're still going, what the heck am I doing? You know, because you were never given the choice in the first place to make any kind of rational decision. I took a year off this year, and maybe two, because I want to know when I decide what I'm going to do. That's exactly what I want to do with my life. So therefore, I will be living instead of just working.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think we're parents with school-age children now, and if it gets any crazier than this, I don't know where the stress level is going to go, but maybe it does get crazier when they get a little older. But it seems like fragmentation is what drives us so crazy, trying to go in so many different directions. I had this odd notion that I could teach Sunday school. See, I taught Sunday school before we had kids, and I'll probably teach Sunday school after our kids are grown, as long as I'm able. But I had this odd notion that I could teach Sunday school. See, I'll teach all of your kids, and then you be soccer mom and team mother and all for me when my kids play soccer. But I found out that's not how it works. You know, everybody on the soccer team thinks that, you know, it doesn't seem to matter that I teach the kids over here. They think I should also be heavily involved in whatever their love is, which is soccer. And so I would wish that at least in the church we would allow each other to do our gifts, and then not expect each other to be split in a million pieces. If my husband works very hard ministering to 150 high school kids every day for 5 days in the week, then he should be able to come to the church and be nurtured and not be expected to split himself in a million pieces and try to minister also on Sunday or whatever. And I should be able to teach Sunday school kids from now until I want to quit or have to quit, and not be expected to also do all of the other things, at least by the church community.
Lady, I don't know what. Okay, I see here and then here, okay?
As I get old and more gray hair, I remember one of the key words is no. It really is. In our society, we're taught maybe not to say no. We got to learn to say no to those things. Just a problem. I have the same problems you have. I'm the soccer mom on our soccer team. And I teach Sunday school, and I am on deacons, and I do this and that. But as I get older, I find that I've got to learn to say no. And maybe that's something we don't teach enough in amongst ourselves, and we don't accept that as well.
Back row, and then
I also work in helping professions with people who are basically in recovery from alcoholism, and I read a lot about the church, and frankly I just recently got back to being active in the church, and one of the annoyances that I personally felt, and one of the annoyances that I see with my patients, seems to coincide, and I'm not sure I can express this clearly, but when I speak for the church and when I hear the church talking, I hear there are economic responsibilities that happen Monday through Friday, then there are family responsibilities that seem to happen in the evening, then there are spiritual responsibilities that happen in the church. I don't think that's the way it works. I think church is a worship opportunity, and somehow spirituality and spiritual development is much broader. What I'm saying is, when I see people in trouble, I see them very guilty, somehow with having been gone from the church, and therefore feeling not spiritual. And my question is, isn't this all spiritual? You know, isn't work spiritual, fatherhood spiritual, soccer mom spiritual? Can somehow we as a church body or church members help people to live a more spiritual life, a more congruent life, rather than just look at Sunday morning from 10 to 11 as the spiritual hour? I'm not sure I express this clearly, but somehow it seemed to me much broader. And whether, I guess whether I go to church on Sunday or not does not seem to me anymore to be the key to whether I'm spiritually active. I believe I'm spiritually growing, I'm spiritually contributing in my work, some days not. But somehow there's a broader picture than just Sunday morning, the way I was brought up. That I guess is my point. And I've heard us in the room talk about spiritual as if it only happens in the church. And I think that's a very, very limiting and confining and constricting view.
Anybody like to respond to that?
There's a number of friends talking about their stresses and their how they manage their time. Many of them have no church, and they find their spirituality in the things they love the most. I've got one friend who has a jet boat. His form of worship and getting in contact with him and his family is to go out to a lake and blast around. I have other one employee in particular who finds her spirituality in time with her children. And in terms of how they handle work and their lives, if they're given time to take care of their families, they're far better at work and come to work more relaxed if that's being taken care of. And they talk about their families or their jet boats in the same way that many people I've heard here have talked about their church. And so they're finding spirituality in other, alternative ways.
Now, I think you, ma'am, you had your hand up
Well, I guess it was really on back to another area, which was about work itself. If you want
to... Okay, maybe would anybody else like to respond to that area before we shift? Did you?
Well, I was going to respond to what this gentleman had said about the notion of compartmentalization and the church is where you're spiritual and so on and so forth and why that's bad. I think that the thrust of what Luther and others were saying was precisely a response to that. That is, to understand the vocation is very much central to one's own spiritual life and so on. Having said that, there's just something about the realities of the world that we live in out there that tends really to reinforce the compartmentalization. By contrast, I mean, just take the experience of people at Holden Village, because there, the kind of community, the presence of a community in which the waitri, the garbologist, the teaching staff, the people who do dish team, which is also some of the people in the teaching staff, the Mavericks, all of these people somehow can see, because of the size of this community and because it's so face-to-face, they somehow feel that what they're doing contributes to the well-being of one another, because one can see this, we're sufficiently intimate as a community that this is visible to us. Some of us happen to find that what we're doing coincides with a special talent, but that's not always true, and you wouldn't find most people saying, the meaning of my existence centrally is garbology. You know, I mean, it may be that for some people that's true. It happens to click into one of their particular talents and interests and commitments. But the reason that they can find that work meaningful and in a sense that suffused with a kind of spirituality is because of this face-to-face intimate community and the kind of fluidity between work and worship and so forth and so on. The problem is when we go back to Chicago or Los Angeles or Denver or even Keokuk, there isn't that kind of often supportive community within which these things fall into place and have a kind of wholeness that we can feel the spiritual dimension to it all, I think. So a lot of our problem has to do with just the kind of a world in which we find ourselves when we leave a place like Holmanville.
I'll throw a dose of realism. I work in the kitchen. When it's 5 minutes before we ring the dinner bell, we don't really feel that great sense of wholeness. We feel like, I wish they would all drop dead outside. And I'll tell you, hunger awareness is the sweetest meal in the best afternoon I've had all day.
I always expected that was the real reason for hunger.
There are times we've threatened to have pop hunger awarenesses.
I think it's actually a Waitry awareness meal.
I'm saying, I don't even think in a place like Holden you can just escape from that. I mean, this is still America.
Yeah, well, my point was, in a way, you didn't find the sense of meaning in the work, meaning the actual hard stuff you do in there in the kitchen. The point is that the reason the work is meaningful is because you can see it as a part. Your task, together with the Mavericks, together with everyone else's, makes the community work and winds up serving neighbors, right? In a loving way. I mean, that does result from what you do.
I mostly work for the free time. I like to go
to the classes. That's fine. That's the point. This is working to live, and I want to say a good word. That's my point. I think there's a good word to be said for working to live. Exactly.
I work at as a social worker at an institution or a regional center for mentally retarded people in Minnesota, and I think we're governed completely by laws, by licensing people. And I think what's happened since I've worked there is that the idea of work so permeates the place that everybody's got to have a job. I have a client who earned, and you earned a percentage of the minimum wage that you can earn. And we have many kinds of very meaningful jobs, and for many clients it's wonderful. I have one resident, for instance, who earned $1 in the last 3 months. And I thought maybe that perhaps it wasn't really that meaningful to her. And she was saying that every minute she did not like to work, but it's very important that she have a job because everybody's got to have a job. And if you have a 25 IQ and you don't have a job, that's too bad. And what's happened is we no longer have music therapy. We no longer have art therapy. We no longer have much of anything, but we have a wonderful vocational program. And if you don't fit into that vocational program, that's too bad. We have, in order for a client to lay down after they finish their work program, we have to have it on their schedule that they are allowed to lie down. Now the problem is, I'm serious here, we do not, you know, you can have sleep in, but then it's on your schedule that you sleep in. And it is very difficult to allow some clients to sleep in and other ones not, but some of the staff are more flexible about this than others, but it's got to be on your schedule. And I think if a licensing person comes in and people are doing nothing, you get written up for it. We all make the laws. And it says work is important, and it's important that everybody work. And whether you like to work or don't like to work, whether you're capable of producing, it doesn't really matter. But we've lost a lot in the meantime. We've really lost a lot of other things. For instance, we have a ceramic shop, but since it's now for producing, for to sell, then of course if you don't do a good job, then you don't get to take it home with you, then a staff has to finish it and redo it. You don't get to take it home. And because everything's geared for this work business.
Okay, I'm just saying here, and we're gonna come pretty close to 10.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking, again, going back to the original question, where we live, work, or to work, to worth to live. I think that for me personally, it's a question of expectations and needs, basically. And I was having some thoughts about that because I feel that not only in my profession, but also, you know, in terms of spiritual life and in my congregation. And I think that sometimes we have too many expectations about things. It could be anything, family life, or, you know, or parish life, or job and everything. And I think that at times, you know, we have stronger needs, and therefore we, you know, just in terms of church, I'm thinking, sometimes we need more from the congregation and things like that. And some other times we have really high expectations that the congregation cannot really meet, and the pastor cannot really meet our, you know, needs and things like that. And I agree with you that you're saying that, I mean, we are intelligent people and we have a lot of resources and we can just be more spiritual on our own if we have at least a leading, you know, not leading figure, but, you know, if we know how to get there. And I would say the same about, you know, my profession. What is my need, really? I mean, of course I need money to survive. I mean, I have to work for necessity, but I still have to see what my inner, I mean, really important needs are, you know, that in terms of fulfilling also myself, which doesn't mean necessarily to be a big shot, you know, somewhere, you know, and publishing or whatever, but it means that I have to believe in something and I'm able to give what I think is important. And so, I think, you know, I would like, I would look at things in that way and see what is more important. Sometimes, you know, you just go back and forth, and you have to strike a balance between your needs and the needs of other people and your expectations and see whether your expectations are realistic or not.
Well, I'd just like to comment on your, what I really agree with you about your sense of broad spirituality. And isn't everything spiritual? And I think there's a distinction between spirituality and worship life, i.e. what we go to church for, apparently. And I come out of a home where home worship was almost every day. You know, it was a very strong tradition. And as I look back to my church, I really didn't get that much, even though I went all the time. I was raised in the same kind of church Rob Wall was, so. But it was from my parents, and one of the things, the connections I think in contemporary society is between sort of our material consumerism mentalities. We're always looking to something else to give us what we can find within ourselves. It's God in us. And statistics, I can't tell you exactly what they are, but they're abysmally low of even good church-going families to have home worship. And so you think about all these people coming to church kind of looking and sucking up, you know, from somewhere else. And if we're sort of these strong units, whatever our relationships are, and we're coming to church, we're both, it's a mutuality, it's a giving and a taking. So I guess I'm a real advocate for home worship, and then all the studies, and all of us can hardly talk at Holden. It's probably better than anywhere else. But it, and if we've got small communities at home, but people find it very difficult, community being one of our themes this week, to talk about our spirituality, sexuality, to worship together in our in intimate relationships. So, I mean, I see a real connection with that, and then we're sort of looking to all these compulsive things we're doing in church to try to, you know, give everybody what they need. And that would just be my comment, to really advocate home worship and start there.
I saw two, and then let's... Mark, would you like to wind it up with a concluding comment here, and then we'll wind up here. Okay, back there.
I just want to relate a story. I have a brother, an older brother, who's an artist, and he was the kind of guy when we were growing up that, you know, would ditch school to go surfing, or, and now that he's an artist, he lives his life, he'll sell a painting for like $1,000, and then he'll just take off to New York and blow almost all the money. And he drives around on the freeways in like an old VW bug, and he has a car phone which really isn't connected to anything, so he acts like he's talking to people on the street. And my whole, you know, it wasn't until I got into school and I started pursuing, you know, higher goals and everything, that I realized how important he was, because a lot of times I'll start stressing out about something, and I'll think about something my brother would do or what he would do in that situation. And you can't always do what he does in the situation. Just work and go surfing and blow all your money to go to El Salvador and go surfing or something. But people like that serve a purpose. I mean, they teach us how to relax. And he never really takes anything seriously. And it comes through in his art. And that's one of the reasons why he's successful and happy. Not very wealthy, but he has a good time. And so I think we need more people like that. And you could probably learn from your kids. I mean, I grew up in a high school where that happened, like football practice or soccer practice, and if the waves were good, half the guys weren't there, you know. We need to look to those people more.
Okay, up here and then close.
I just wanted to respond to what you said about people finding their spirituality and finding a deeper meaning in jet boating or in their kids. My mother found her spirituality very deeply in her kids. We've all left now. She's lost her church. What happens when the jet boat runs out of gas? That kind of thing. I'm just saying, one of the reasons I'm up here at Holden is to find some sort of spiritual foundation so that life doesn't revolve around work, so that life doesn't revolve around education. Something that you know, that's just there, that never goes away, that's all the time there, that makes everything sort of, I guess, pale in comparison. And that's why I really caution people who mistake, because I know I have many times, mistake this deeper meaning in spirituality for even such things as painting or pottery or things like that. These are all things that can break. They're all things that can leave you. They're all things that aren't really stable. And that's why I think that all of us are searching for some sort of stability. And that's why, I mean, I haven't found it yet, but that's why I think spirituality is just something incredibly important that makes work pale on this side.
Thank you for that comment. It strikes me one of the themes that's been going through in one way or another has been the observation that we get into trouble when we look to anything for more than it can deliver, which I suppose is the definition of the violation of the First Commandment. And the American society would seem to be looking to a work and what it can give you by way of validation or busyness to probably for more than it can give, and we're reaping some of the consequences, and there are other reasons. But Mark, you have a
okay, I'll say a final word.
Yes.
Final story. Closest buddy in my first teaching job was an Orthodox Jew from Brooklyn, and since argument was a way of life for him, the two of us spent most of our time arguing with each other, especially about the Bible. And one evening he said something to me that pertains to this forum. He said, "You know, you Christians, you just work too hard." He says, "That's because you've got this Bible all wrong here." He says, "You all remember that God took 6 days to make the world. On the seventh day he rested, and you try to imitate God, so you work 6 days, then you rest, then you work 6 days, then you rest, then you work 6 days, then you rest." But he said, "Think about it, Chuang. There's nothing in the Bible that says God went back to work." He says, "So this is my aim in life, and it should be yours. Work 6 days and take eternity off."